Made in the city. For the city.
We are Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Matt Bentman and Alan Alder. Ruth is not here for this programme, but rest assured she will be back next time.
Today we hear more detail about the new farmers' market that's planned for Cambridge and about the far-reaching changes proposed for Mill Lane, and they include a new public square.
We'll be speaking with a new coffee supplier who can be found at Ely Market on Saturdays and Cambridge Market on Sundays and Thursdays. Now he'll be talking about how he chooses his coffees and how to keep them.
And Ruth catches up with Stella Pereira to find out about her recent event with Kiyong for Eat Cambridge and about her grazing table.
We have our regular cocktail of the month from Guardian featured Aoife Maxwell.
And there's a lot of food and drink news today, several pop-ups and supper clubs to tell you about, and a brunch club too. Gigi Perry will be here to tell us about the university food and drink news.
And today we are also asking you to contact us with any food ideas you may have. They don't have to be original, just something that you have found that works. It could be flavour combinations, ways of cooking, interesting or especially good food that you have come across in the shops or at the market. Anything that might be of interest to you, our listener. You can tweet us at flavour105 or email studio@cambridge105.fm before the end of the programme. Now we might build this into a regular feature if there's enough interest, so get in touch with any food or drink ideas that you may have.
Yeah, please do get in touch. Now, in the last edition of Flavour, we heard some news about a farmers' market that's going to start up in Cambridge as part of the university's new Northwest site. I spoke with Roger Taylor, director of the university's estate strategy and the project manager for Northwest Cambridge, to get a bit more detail.
It's located just at the top of Maddingley Rise by astronomy and by earth sciences. So it's just on the north side of Maddingley Road, opposite the West Cambridge site.
And when's the farmers market likely to start operating?
Well, over the last period, we've been focused on demolishing old farm buildings, some of the old farm buildings. We've converted the farmhouse to the project office and added a new temporary wing onto that. So now what we're left with is lots of concrete hard standing and a couple of barns that provide shelter. And we're now therefore able to think in detail about bringing forward our thoughts for such things as farmers' markets, even a Christmas fair, who knows. So I'd hope that by September, October time, it's getting towards the back end of the year, but it's good to do that when people have got back from holiday, and we hope to stick a toe in the water then. I would emphasise that we have no great plan for bringing someone in. This is intended to be something that grows out of local demand, so we're busy talking to all kinds of people as to their level of interest and whether they would be interested in participating.
And is there much interest?
Yes, we've found quite a reasonable degree of interest. I personally talked to some of the existing stallholders on the market square, where they really feel that it would be better from their viewpoint as local market, farmers market traders, if they had a defined position rather than perhaps selling, trying to sell their goods next to handbags and clothes and other things. And we're certainly not looking to damage the existing market, far from it. We're really interested in creating new opportunities for people rather than trying to pull activities out of the centre, so to speak. So, I mean, what we're talking about is a very, very modest level of offer, certainly compared to the size of the Cambridge Central Market. I mean, it's a different scale of things altogether.
Is it likely to be a lot smaller?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
But the space for it to grow organically?
Yes, to an extent. I mean, why are we doing this? Well, the key thing is that this really is a precursor to what we're doing on the main Northwest Cambridge site, where The university is taking the unusual step of creating a local centre from the outset. And of course, one of the problems is that whilst we're building probably in total about 1,000 units initially, that's the university for its staff and students, it isn't big enough to necessarily encourage activity growth on its own. So what we've got to do is sort of pump prime it, and that really is why we're looking to do this at Gravel Hill, so that in the fullness of time, when the new market square is created as part of the first phase of development, then the activities from there can transfer to the new market square.
So we'd be talking about a daily market then?
No. I think in the first instance, certainly one would be talking about a weekend activity, and not every weekend, maybe once a month in the first instance. As far as the new market square is concerned, we're going to have a big new supermarket off the market square, so they welcome the activity. We've had that discussion with them, but one doesn't see it as being, again, something to challenge the central Cambridge market. It's something to give animation and levels of interest, something that provides a bit of a different offer to the very hygienically packaged and cellophane wrapped goods of the supermarket, really.
So, a farmer's market that will in time move to a new market square in the northwest site. Roger said that as well as having a supermarket at the new market square when it opens, there would be 8 to 10 shop units. The university is keen that these should be more than just a dry cleaners and a chemist, so it looks like there may well be scope for some interesting independents to move into, and let's hope they do.
So, did you find out more about developments in Mill Lane?
Yes, these will be extensive. It's important to say that the proposals haven't yet been finally approved. Here's Roger Taylor again.
If we could move on to Mill Lane, because there seems to be quite a lot planned for Mill Lane. There's talk about cafes and restaurants on the ground floor of the building. So does that mean new buildings, or are the current buildings going to be remodelled in some way?
Well, Mill Lane, or the old press site and Mill Lane, which really extends all the way down from Trumpington Street, either side of Mill Lane to the river, really is a pretty unique opportunity, certainly in terms of the university's estate, because, of course, what's been happening to a great extent is that as science has grown, as the requirements for new buildings has come about, both in relation to this site and other sites such as the new museum site, the requirements for buildings has changed substantially. So over a period of years, the use of Old Press Mill Lane buildings has really diminished. The buildings themselves are in varying states of repair. Some are particularly noteworthy buildings. It's part of a conservation area, of course. We believe that some of the buildings are long past their economic life. So broadly what the university is doing is saying that this site is no longer required for its operational use, seeing what other uses can be sensibly brought here that would give the university an economic return, which is one of its charitable objectives, but perhaps at the same time also meeting other objectives, such as, for instance, providing student accommodation for the colleges. We're looking at a package of development, really, and we're in the early stage of discussion with the local authority that would, as you say, include a substantial element of ground floor active development that would provide restaurant and cafe opportunities and some business space as well.
And will there be opportunities for local providers?
Again, I think the university is in a particular situation here because, of course, it's not a developer. It's not out to make a quick buck and to go away, far from it. It anticipates being here for at least another 800 years. And the university's objectives are therefore much longer term in terms of its estate. So unlike a developer, a normal developer, it doesn't have to get someone in to provide the biggest rent so that it can sell the property at the highest price as quickly as possible. The university can take a longer term view and build the development of this site so that maybe there are changes managed over a period of time that makes it more and more successful. I don't want to give an overblown comparison, but if you look at how Covent Garden started in terms of its development, 25, 30 years ago, when the cabbages and bananas were pushed out. Over a period of time, it developed. And today, it's, of course, totally different to anything that appeared previously. And as I say, I'm not looking to replicate Covent Garden, but I think it does offer Cambridge a fantastic opportunity for something that's very scarce, which is public access to the river and good places to eat and relax and have fun in the centre of Cambridge.
And you're able, are you legally, to turn down a big national catering company, cafe or restaurant in favour of somebody local?
Well, that will be up to the university in due course. I think an important aspect is the physical aspect of the buildings, which many of which will be retained. And of course, those buildings tend not to have the big footplates beloved of so many of the national or international retailers. By retailers, I mean restaurateurs. And I think, as with all things in life, it's maybe a case of striking a balance. Whilst it's important to get some recognised names in to make sure that there's a footfall and that it's established as a destination, I think the very nature of the place can mean that there are small units or perhaps oddly shaped units in existing buildings that will appeal to smaller retailers and local retailers, because of course smaller units come with a much lower price tag in terms of rent, which of course is helpful for people starting up. So I think the university can provide that, and I think it's absolutely vital that a level of interest is provided that's something different to the standard units. I'm not going to name the names, everyone knows the standard names, but I think the fascination is to find something that's a bit different, that you can wander around and be surprised and, oh wow, I've never seen that, it's a new Polish bread shop or whatever it might be.
And there's going to be a public square. Where's that going to be? Actually, on the river itself?
That's right. Well, this one goes down to the bottom of Mill Lane, right by the river. At the moment, of course, it's all very tight. It goes through virtually a right-angle bend. But on the right-hand side, there's a warehouse building, which we believe is not of huge merit. It's next to a very attractive pub on the riverfront. And we hope that through negotiation agreement with the local authority and English Heritage, that we'll all agree that there would be huge benefit in creating a new square on the riverfront, directly on the riverfront, so that restaurants and cafes can be alongside it, together with the pub, and to give people a place to congregate, to walk, to relax, to enjoy the river, and to watch the theatre, of course, people having a go at punting. And the punting is a very important part of it, so that's something that we'll be talking about with the punt operators, of course.
And that building is the one that's adjacent to the Anchor Pub?
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. This square, would it be, this public square, would it be able to have events in the evening? And there's sort of quite a lot of criticism at the moment that the market square is essentially closed in the evening. Would this new public square be able to host things like music, theatre, street food, various events of that type?
Well, as far as the size of the square is concerned, I think one has to be realistic. It's not the scale of the market square in the centre of Cambridge. However, I see no reason why there shouldn't be opportunities for pop-up food and such like, and modern attractions, music possibly as well, and entertainment. I think one has to remember that the intention is here to create a mixed development, so that it's not just all about what happens at the lower levels, it's also what happens above, and people's homes and so forth. So whilst we anticipate that there will be some residential and student accommodation, one has to put these things in a context and limit the fun to some extent.
This all sounds really exciting, and I feel quite impatient for it to happen, but I guess it's not going to happen soon.
property development terms. I came to the university in 2008, and it's taken until last year to obtain planning consent for the North West Cambridge scheme, so that gives you an idea of how long these things can be in gestation. However, I'm pleased to say that we've now made a lot of progress relative to relocating university departments from the site. There are still some questions to be answered in that respect, and we've started to engage with the local authority and English Heritage in terms of the discussions on the potential form of development, the messing, the generalities, and how that can be brought forward. I think it's true to say that one would be wildly optimistic or over-optimistic to think that it would be anything less than 18 months to 2 years to secure the necessary consent. And of course, that's probably a realistic period for our rehousing people as well. So one might think that the scheme could start subject to all approvals, which of course includes the university agreeing to go ahead with it as well, in a couple of years' time. And then inevitably it would be 2 to 3 years to build out, because it would be in more than one phase. So, you know, it sounds a long time sitting here, but 5 years is probably a realistic scenario to see something like this delivered.
That sounds very interesting and far-reaching too, but no guarantees there about events in the public square.
No, that will take time. We've not heard from the City Council about any move to open the Market Square in the evenings yet either, though we've heard one or two encouraging whispers, but that's something for us to follow up for next time.
Now, rather faster on her feet than the City Council is Heidi White. She is part of the team behind Eat Cambridge. She has now set up Food Park Cambridge. If you don't know about it, it happens on Fridays in Station Road, almost opposite the Microsoft building. There is street food there from 8 a.m. until about 8 p.m. But here is Heidi yesterday morning talking with Ruth about how it's all going.
Right, so we're here at Food Park.
Hello.
This is the second week. How's it going?
Brilliantly, actually. Not that we're surprised, because we already know that everyone loves street food, but it's gone even better because the sun's been out. We've had way more interest from people just popping by that hadn't actually heard about it on Twitter. Shock. Some people aren't on there. And it's just been brilliant. Last week was super busy. Traders sold out before the end of lunchtime, so everyone's more prepared for a busier session at lunchtime this week. And we're adding an evening session, so people can pop down after work or on the way to the train, and we'll be open till 8 p.m.
Amazing. Is that going to be everyone?
No, actually. It will eventually, but for the first week, we're just trying it with a couple of traders. So this evening, we'll have Inda's Kitchen, Scandi Dogs, and Warm Your Cockles will stick around for coffee. And then next week, hopefully, it'll be the whole gang, but I'll keep you posted.
How do you feel? Are you crazy chat? You should be.
Yeah, yeah, just a bit. It's a relief that it's happened, and yeah, it is actually good. And people actually came on the first day. That was a good feeling.
Yeah.
And there's just been such a lot of interest on Twitter and people emailing wanting to be involved. So, yeah, it's really growing. And we're hoping to add another day in July, so we'll have a two-day market here at Station Road. And I can't release news yet, but we'll have another site by next month as well, hopefully.
Great, well, thank you so much for chatting with me.
No worries, thanks for coming down.
Oh, of course, are you kidding? I will wake up early for one of those steak and onion muffin thingies and this coffee. So yeah,
we'll be here.
And that was Heidi White speaking with Ruth. Great news that it will be running for 2 days a week from next month, Thursdays and Fridays. I went there for breakfast last week and it was a very nice experience. Breakfast muffin from Steak and Honour and coffee from Warming Your Cockles. La Maison du Steak was there too, a little further on. I didn't see them at first, or I would have had a croissant too. There are several tables and chairs to sit on, and it was nice and convivial. In fact, I had breakfast with Aoife Maxwell and Gigi Perry, which I hadn't expected. Did you enjoy it, Gigi?
Yes, it was a wonderful way to start the day. Really set me up well as well.
Good. Well, all sounds very enjoyable.
Yes, you'll have to come, Matt.
Radio gets results.
Advertising your business is our business. For more details, call Cambridge 967 105 or email sales@cambridge105.fm. Stand out and get noticed with Cambridge 105.
You're listening to Flavour with Alan Alder and me, Matt Bentman. Still to come on today's programme, we hear from Bruce at Silver Oak Coffee about how he chooses what coffees to sell and how best to keep that coffee. Stella Pereira on her recent collaboration with Kiung and the development of her grazing table. Aoife Maxwell with two cocktails of the month this month. And then we have lots of food and drink events to tell you about.
But first, we are asking you to send us your food and drink ideas, quick items that we can pass on. And here are a couple of ideas we've received. Kim has shared these with us, so thanks to her. The first is about elderflowers. There are still some around, but this is probably their last weekend. Anyway, you can infuse the flavour from elderflowers into sunflower oil. Just cover them in the oil and leave for a day or so. Then you can use the oil to make a light vinaigrette, and the flavour and scent of the elderflowers come through. It works less well with more pungent oils like olive oil because their flavour masks the delicacy of the elderflowers. The second idea is good for people who grow their own broad beans. You pluck the tips out of broad bean plants after they've flowered, and this makes them less attractive to blackfly. But did you know that these delicate tips are good in salads?
Excellent. And if any other listeners have food or drink ideas to share, please tweet us at flavour105 or email studio@cambridge105.fm before the end of the programme. Now, talking of elderflowers, have you made your elderflower cordial this year, Alan?
Well, yes, I have. And I chanced upon Axel Minnett in the market during the week. He's a keen elderflower cordial maker. And actually was on Flavour 2 years ago talking about it and doing a tasting. And he's trying a slightly less sweet recipe this year, so I've tried it too because the one I used last year was just too sweet. It's very simple. 1.5 litres of cold water into which dissolve 750 grams of sugar. Add 20 grams of citric acid and about 50 elderflower heads. Don't wash the heads, just shake them to remove any insects. Leave the heads to soak for 24 hours, stirring occasionally, and then filter, maybe through muslin.
But doesn't less sugar, that means it won't last as long before it goes off, yes?
Yes, that might be true, but I've decided to freeze some of it in small bottles, so I'll have some throughout the summer.
Mm.
But as I said earlier, you do need to act quickly to get the heads. They are coming to the end.
Or just drive north to get some.
Yes.
Me, Mandy Morton, and me, Nicola Upson, for the best in music, theatre and celebrity interviews on The Eclectic Light Show, the essential monthly arts entertainment magazine. Sundays 2 till 4 on Cambridge 105.
There's a new coffee retailer around, Silver Oak Coffee. Ruth caught up with the owner, Bruce, at Ely Market and found out about how he chooses his beans and his roasting style.
I'm with Bruce of Silver Oak Coffee. How did you get started with this?
Well, I'm a retired Metropolitan Police officer, and I was forced into an early retirement for an injury at work. I'd always been a coffee enthusiast, and I was looking for something that I could control my hours with, and it would also be something of interest to me. Coffee roasting was something that had piqued my interest, so I thought I'd take the plunge.
How do you choose the beans?
I go to my green bean suppliers in London. They put all their green bean offerings on the table. They roast them up, and then we do a process which is called cupping. You follow very strict guidelines on the amount of coffee to water ratio, and a length of time and a grind setting, and then you go around tasting all the coffees and you decide which ones you like, and from that you make a decision, and then I apply my own roasting style to bring out of the beans what I want to bring out.
Well, how do you do that?
For the market that I'm looking at, which is slightly different to the contemporary coffee market in London, I roast very slightly longer. My development time is very slightly longer, but still much shorter than traditionally, like a lot of coffees you would see in supermarkets that are, they will call them things like rich roast and dark roast. That's basically much darker than I would roast. I pull it back quite a lot from there, but I'm looking to develop the acids and the flavour compounds within the coffee, but at the same time make the coffee extract well enough so that it's still robust and tasty. You know you're drinking coffee, but at the same time you're enjoying the flavours of the individual beans.
How long do the beans last? How long should you have them for?
I sell them in packets with a one-way valve. So as long as you keep the packet sealed,
yeah,
keep it out of the sunlight and away from moisture, and at a regular temperature, so in a cupboard. You don't need to keep them in a freezer. They will last for comfortably 6-8 weeks, but they'll actually last considerably longer than that. But you will notice if you do tests over time, which I've done with my beans, that some flavours and aromas do start to deteriorate slightly. But realistically, you can have the beans 6 months. But these are high-quality, specialty Arabica beans. If you're going to pay this sort of money and have this sort of quality, you want to use them up.
Yeah.
But yes, they'll last 6 months. I mean, some packets in the supermarket will give you a year. I would say aim to use them within 8 weeks.
Okay.
If you grind them, depending on the grind setting, then you really need to bring that time back to a week or 2 weeks, depending on how tightly you have it ground.
Which one's your favourite?
Oh, my favourite is always changing, because as you will imagine, after every single roast, I test the flavour of the beans after the roast against a reference. Then when I choose to drink at home will change and vary depending on which brew method I'm currently investigating with the coffees. However, I suppose a simple answer to that question is currently my favourite is the Colombia Santa Ines, which is quite a robust coffee. Dark chocolate notes, sweet fruit note running through it. Very nice. Grown by three small holders in Colombia around a village called San Antonio. One of them only has 2 acres to his farm. I think the biggest out of the three is 6 hectares. And they have produced this fabulous coffee that is, I mean, it proves very popular and probably is my current favourite.
Where can we see you?
I'm at Ely Market Saturdays, Cambridge Market on Thursdays and Sundays, but I also appear at selected food festivals, such as I'm at Cressing Temple Barnes in Braintree in July. At the end of June, I'm at Colchester Castle Park. In November, I'm at the BBC Good Food Show at the NEC.
Oh, wow, great. OK, well, thank you so much for chatting with me.
You're welcome.
Well, doesn't that make you want to rush out and try some of that Colombian coffee? Well, as Bruce said, he's at the market in Cambridge on Sundays and Thursdays. So if you're listening to this edition of Flavour at its repeat slot at 7 on Sunday mornings, you haven't got long to wait.
In Your Company is Cambridge 105's business programme, presented by me, Sam Davis. In Your Company captures the diversity of the Cambridge business scene by talking to not only the high-tech headline grabbers, but also the sole traders and the startups and the experts who can help us make sense of it. Listen to In Your Company at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoons every fortnight. And podcasts of our shows are available on the Cambridge 105 website. Community radio in your city, Cambridge 105.
We've been asking for your food ideas and we've received a couple more. One is another way of using broad bean leaves. I think we're about to turn into broad bean radio news. especially the leaves, the young ones from the top of the plant. You can boil them for a minute or two and use them as a vegetable, it seems, so you don't need to throw them away. We've heard from Maria, who's enjoying strawberries from the market at the moment, and of course they are delicious fresh, but she's also been using them to make Eton mess with meringue and lots of fresh cream. That does sound good.
So thanks for that, and keep sending us your ideas, tips and hints. You can tweet at Flavour105 or email us studio@cambridge105.fm, but do it soon. Now, one person who is keen on experimenting with food and food presentation is Stella Pereira. Ruth spoke with her during the week.
What have you been up to since the royalty? I went back to the Duke House on, was it the 4th? Yeah, it feels like it's been ages now. Yeah, I went back to the Duke House and we created a grazing table, which is more of an installation, a curation of the table itself. So it wasn't just about the food, it was also about how it looked on the table. So I tried to make it as beautiful as I could. And most of the things, there was a lot of Portuguese influences, so the cheese and the chorizo and the things that I used were Portuguese. Some of the things as well were, I sort of did it how I always do it at home. I make everything from scratch. So I marinate my own olives because it just tastes different. You can never get the same taste from olives that you just you buy. It's not to your liking. So I did that, and I used some bits that would be usually thrown away, like the radish greens. I turned that into a pesto with macadamia nuts, and it turned out people really loved it, which I was really happy about. But that was the grazing table, so it was mostly very well displayed food, and it was just beautiful because it was all part of an exhibition as well, which Mandy and Karen curated. Mm-hmm. They had a group of artists from the Cambridge Creative Network. They asked me to do the grazing table. But apart from the grazing table, we also had little canapes, Portuguese canapes, and people seemed to really enjoy that. One of my favorites was the cozido à portuguesa, and I turned it into a croquette. So it felt like you're having a whole plate of... cozido à portuguesa is a Portuguese stew. I think you being Spanish, you've got something very similar.
Yeah, we've got cozido español.
But it's incredibly good. But by the time you finish having one of each meat, one of each vegetable, you end up with a massive plate of food. Yeah. And I condensed it all into a little square and a bite size. And once you put that in your mouth, it tastes like cozida portuguesa in one bite. So that went down very well. We also had music by my brothers, and everybody loved the music as well.
Is a grazing table something we'll see in the future?
I hope so, because I love eating from a grazing table, because there's 1,000 combinations that you can get. One of the things that I put was gooseberries, which are really sour and tart, and you know, no one would eat raw gooseberries, but I placed them next to the honey. Mm. And if you dip them in honey, they're actually very nice. So the grazing table is also about experimenting. Even though I put a combination of things, and I try and place things to influence your mixtures, you could just go crazy and have and turn it into a completely different dish on your plate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
But yeah, I love curating. When I do my supper clubs, you'll notice that my tables are not just plates and forks and food. Everything that goes into it has a meaning. So I'll start by illustrating the menus, and I'll make you napkins, and I'll set the table with plates that I find along the way. And every plate or every piece that's on the table has a bit of a story behind it.
That's nice.
So with the grazing table, I get opportunity of including all the stuff that I've been collecting.
Having been to one of Stella's supper clubs, I can vouch for the fact that it is a work of art, and she has one coming up tonight, and Gigi's going. more details in the news section at the end of the programme. Ruth asked her about the jams she's been making, and they're quite unusual.
So at Eat Cambridge, you had some jams with urban larder.
Yes.
Tell us more about these.
Well, the purpose of the jams is try and do things in season. So every time there's a new fruit...
Yeah.
And it's become a habit of mine to make jam every time there's a new fruit in season. I started with four. There was strawberry port and bay leaf. That happened quite by chance, and as does most of my cooking. I just sort of experiment in the kitchen and pull out all the herbs and pull out everything I have and just mix things. And with the port and bay leaf, the bay leaf seems to intensify the flavor of the strawberries. So I like that. The other two that I had was the orange compote, and I added some muscatel and some vanilla because I love muscatel and I keep putting it in everything.
Because it's delicious.
And that's my father's recipe, actually.
Oh.
My dad is obsessed with orange marmalade.
Yeah.
My dad's obsessed with orange marmalade. So I had to put that as one of my first jams. And the other one, which is also quite interesting, is the tomato port and basil. The tomato jam comes from my husband's side of the family. His mother makes an incredible jam. And I hope one day I can sort of match her jam. But I've tried my best. I had basil lying around and I just threw a few, and it actually worked really well for my...
How do you eat these jams? You're not like a normal jam, slap it on some toast.
No, first of all, there's a lot of fruit in it. There's about more than 60% of fruit in it, but we would usually have them with cheeses. So from fresh cheeses to goat's cheeses, they work really well. I like the tomato jam with a goat's cheese, with a strong goat's cheese, and that's how we have it. You could either have it for breakfast, or you could have it after a meal instead of dessert, have cheese jam and sourdough.
Lovely. I'm looking forward to Saturday. When do you think you'll do the next one after tonight?
I'm hoping for mid-July or either the first 2 weeks of July, there'll be something happening. Something quite different, also involving food and art. Yes, to be announced.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you to Stella Pereira there. Now, basil, which Stella mentioned, is quite an adaptable herb, and you can hear Aoife Maxwell using it to make a cocktail in just a few minutes' time.
Ever wanted to know when you can catch your favourite Cambridge 105 show again? Just go on over to cambridge105.fm and check out our schedule page for a complete 7-day rundown. Finding out what's on air and when has never been so easy.
Last Saturday, I was looking through the pages of Cook, the Guardian's food and drink supplement, and my eye quickly alighted on the word rhubarb. And then I saw it was a recipe for rhubarb sour. And that sounded rather familiar, so I looked to see who had supplied the recipe, and it was none other than our very own Aoife Maxwell. Naturally, I tweeted about it, but it was only later that I realised that not only was Aoife's recipe in there, it was also selected by the Guardian's Felicity Cloke as her drink of the summer, a point I mentioned to Aoife when I met her on Thursday.
I know.
In the notes, but you noticed that too.
I was a bit chuffed, to be honest.
So when we finish today, perhaps we could just, because you've done this on flavour, I recognise it.
Yes.
So
one of my favourites.
So perhaps we could just remind people of it at
Absolutely.
The end.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because I think that is such an achievement. Not only is it the first one, which is always a good sign, but she says it's my drink of the summer. So.
There you go.
Well done, Aoife.
So, thanks, Alan.
So what's new today?
Well, today I've got something a bit different. I always say that. So one thing I started playing around with was making my own limoncello, which is really simple. And actually, I wouldn't be a big fan of drinking limoncello just by itself. I mean, I sometimes do if you get it free in restaurants and you really want to keep the party going and you want some more alcohol.
Yeah.
But it's not bad, actually. I'll give you a taste of the stuff I've made myself. And actually, I was amazed how simple it was to make. I mean, obviously, you can buy it, some nice quality stuff, maybe from an Italian.
It smells nice. That's the first thing I noticed.
Yeah, but it was so easy to make. I mean, literally just get some lemons. I think I took about 4 lemons in this case, biggish ones. Remove the peel, trying to avoid the bitter white part.
Yeah.
Steeped it in vodka for about a week, strained it off, and then sweetened it up with a simple syrup, like we've talked about before, that we use in cocktails. And in fact...
So you don't break the lemons up? You don't?
No, you don't put any of the juice in there. It's literally just the zest. And you get this... And you can see the lovely yellow colour.
Yeah.
That's just from sitting in with the lemon zest.
Wow.
And, I mean, I actually used some lemon balm simple syrup that I had lying around because I was just far too lazy to make some plain simple syrup. And I had it there and I thought I'll just use that. And actually, I mean, it's not very strongly flavoured because the lemon is so strong, but it works really well. And it's really easy to make it how sweet you like. So, you know, you add the simple syrup until you get it to the sweetness that you require. But I didn't really make it to drink it just as it is. I mean, one thing I thought it might be nice to have in the house if people come over for dinner. Some people might like some after dinner. But I had a suspicion that it might be good in cocktails. And so it has proved. So I've just been playing around this week, testing out a couple of cocktails with this, with kind of summer drinking in mind. So I've actually got 2 cocktails for you.
Oh.
Both quite simple. So I think they're nice, summery, easy to do,
yeah.
You know, nice and simple. So the first one is very straightforward. So I've just got a champagne glass here. I'm going to take 30 millilitres of freshly squeezed lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to pop it straight into the glass. And then the same amount, so 30 mils of the limoncello that I've made. Okay, and it's taking up almost half the glass there.
Yeah.
Then I've got some sparkling wine. This is just some cava. It's actually, let's open it up. Lost a bit of its fizz. This is really, you know, nothing spectacular. Just a bit of cava, really. And then just to top it off with a little bit of lemon zest.
I'm
trying to do a twirl, but my...
Right. So you filled the glass up
with cava.
And you're just putting a twist of lemon in it.
Yes, which hasn't been very successful.
And it looks really nice, actually, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? It's a nice yellowy colour.
Yeah.
Try it out there. My tester said that it was like alcoholic lemonade, which I think he meant in a good way.
So. Oh, I think that's praise.
Sorry, that's very full.
It is. Well, it's magnificent. It's really refreshing.
It's really refreshing.
Perfect for this weather.
And actually, it's kind of like the drink French 75. I don't know if you've had one of those before, which is gin, lemon juice and sugar often. So it's quite similar, but it's almost easier. You know, you don't have to faff around with sugar or anything like that. And it's not quite as strong because you're using limoncello rather than gin. So I think it's quite nice, actually. And it's actually quite a bit more flavoursome, a bit sweeter than a French 75. I find a French 75 can be a little sharp sometimes. Although I do like it, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I always thought gin plus sparkling wine. That sounds like a good cocktail to me. So So that was my first one with the limoncello. So I was quite surprised how delicious that was. The second one is actually a lighter cocktail again. So I know last time we talked a bit about a sherry cooler that was really light and refreshing, and I've got something very similar this time. So what I've got, I'm going to take, where's my lemon juice? Oh, just not very much, about 15 milliliters of lemon juice, and put it into a tall glass. And then I've got a basil plant in front of me, which I think is why it's smelling so nice in here. I'm going to take about 10 large leaves. If they're smaller, you might want to use a few more.
Yeah.
So I'm just picking these straight from the plant to get them nice and fresh. And I'm literally going to stuff my basil leaves into my glass with my lemon juice. So this is almost like a mojito.
I really like basil, so I'm going to be very interested in this.
Okay, so now I'm taking the pestle part of my mortar and pestle. I'm going to try and muddle it all together.
You're one of the people that knows which is the pestle and which is the mortar.
I did actually have to check. So I'm going to give it a good grind. Now, I know when people are making mojitos with mint, they say that you shouldn't really muddle the mint. You should just clap it to release the oils. But I tried that with the basil, and I found it actually needed a bit of work to get the flavour out. Yeah. So it's making quite an unattractive squelching sounds, but it's all worth it in the end. Oops. Okay. So now my basil leaves are nicely bruised. And I'm going to add my limoncello straight in on top. Give it a little stir. It's smelling good already, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, the combination of the smell of the lemon and the basil is very nice.
It's good. So now I'm just going to fill the glass up with ice on top of the lemon juice, limoncello and basil that's in there.
Right.
Okay. So the glass is filled with ice. I'm going to take some sparkling water.
Right, so you've filled it up to the top.
Yes, but there's quite a bit of empty space
in there. But there's
a
lot of empty space,
So, just top up the rest of the glass then with some sparkling water. Now, I just want to give it a bit of a stir and try and get it around. This may not be the most practical glass. It might be better with a slightly wider glass, but I love it, so I couldn't resist.
Right, so you've mixed that up pretty thoroughly, and that's what, to spread the flavours through as much as anything, just, to cool it?
More really just to mix the flavours up, because with all that ice in there, when I poured in the sparkling water, it wasn't really mixing up the lemon and the basil from the bottom, so I just want to make sure that you get all of it when you taste it. So,
gosh, I do have a good time when I come here.
We like to show people a good time right here. It's subtle,
that is nice.
But it's flavoursome, and it's refreshing, and it doesn't feel too alcoholic.
No, in fact, hardly at all.
Yes.
But the flavour of the basil, which I think by itself is not always, it's something slightly bitter about basil, I think, but in this it isn't.
I always think that basil needs a bit of sugar to bring it out in some way.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. Because I've tried it before in cocktails, and it's a difficult flavour to work with. For instance, I tried to infuse it into a sugar syrup, and it didn't work at all. I think it's quite transient, some of the flavours, maybe.
Right. So, but that is really nice.
And, you know, you could just drink that all day. I mean, because it's not very alcoholic. For one, the limoncello itself must only be about 25% alcohol, and then you've diluted it again, so perfect for lunchtime drinking, maybe barbecue.
Yeah,
something
so
like
it's,
that.
That's the strength of a wine, slightly less alcoholic actually than the average wine.
And again, you could probably make a big jug, serve it out to people. You might have to do quite a bit of muddling with your basil, but if you have a kitchen slave or a husband, if I like to call them,
that's the also nice.
Yes. Then I think that would be good to go. So I was delighted that I found a way to get basil into a cocktail.
Yeah.
I've been trying for a while.
That is truly summery. I mean, I'm sure all of us associate basil with summer, because it's the only time really you use it.
And it really occurred to me, because limoncello is obviously Italian, and then basil is used a lot in Italian cooking. So I thought, lemon basil, let's try it out.
Yeah, lemon and basil is a revelation. Yeah, basil and tomatoes. Yes, I know. Not basil and lemon. That's good. Right. Would you like to remind us about your rhubarb sour?
I definitely would like to remind you about my rhubarb sour. So, I mean, a rhubarb sour is a drink that I make a lot, actually, and I think I've gone on about it and similar drinks here before. Really, you want to start off with your rhubarb vodka or your rhubarb gin, which the recipe for is on my blog, Sweet Peas and Sours. And that's really easy to make. Or you can buy it, don't forget. I don't want people to be put off by feeling they have to go and make their own rhubarb vodka. And I think Chase make a lovely rhubarb vodka that's pretty
And it's
acceptable.
Easily obtainable in
Absolutely.
Shops.
Cambridge wine merchants, somewhere like that, you definitely
get
them.
Yeah, right.
So this really follows my magical cocktail formula once again, you know. So we're talking, in this case, 60 mils of our rhubarb vodka, 30 mils of fresh lemon juice, and then 15 mils of a sugar syrup. And in this case, it was a sugar syrup that, or a simple syrup that I infused with lemon verbena, or you could use lemon balm, which I've used before. And actually in The Guardian, Felicity used lemon thyme infused syrup as a replacement, and it seems to have worked very well indeed. And again, my top tip, the rhubarb bitters. If you haven't bought it yet, people, go out and buy some rhubarb bitters. It really is fantastic. And I was so pleased to see that she enjoyed it, because I think once you try it, it really is good.
Yeah.
And this is the cocktail that I gave people samples of at Eat Cambridge, and it seemed to go down really well.
And they
too.
Enjoyed it, did they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Thanks to Aoife Maxwell for her new cocktails developed for listeners to Flavour. Don't forget to look at Aoife's blog, sweetpeasandsours.com, for more information and some photos. And I checked on the combination of basil and lemon in Nikki Segnit's excellent food thesaurus, and it's in there as a recommended combination, along with some rather unusual pairings such as basil and raspberries, basil and coconut, and basil with hard cheeses. Nikki Segnit gives a recipe for a pasta dish that involves basil and lemon too. It's very simple. Here it is. Just to serve 200 grams of spaghetti cooked until al dente, but while it's cooking, heat 2 tablespoons of olive oil in a small pan and soften a finely chopped shallot in it. Add 2 tablespoons of white wine and simmer for a few minutes before adding the juice and the zest of an unwaxed lemon. Season and turn the heat down. When the pasta is ready, drain it and stir in the lemon sauce with a couple of handfuls of grated parmesan and a small handful of torn basil leaves and 2 teaspoonfuls of butter. So there you go, a nice summer meal for you. It is a really good book, and there were copies of it, the Flavour Thesaurus, in both Heffers and Waterstones in Cambridge when I last looked.
Is there anything of interest in today's Guardian Cook Supplement, Alan?
Well, returning to the broad bean theme, there's 2 pages of broad bean recipes. Broad beans are obviously around at the moment and very nice too. So there's 2 pages of recipes there. Louisa's Spanish broad beans, broad bean dip with pecorino, all sorts of interesting ones. Excuse me while I rustle. There's also the 10 best vegan recipes. And if you think that vegans have a hard, impoverished time food-wise, then think again, chocolate and pecan tart, which looked absolutely fantastic. Peanut butter, cheesecake with maple bananas, all sorts of lovely things. So, yeah, there's quite a lot in it. I'm looking to find Ruby Tando, who's in the British Bake Off. She has a couple of pages there, and she's replacing trusty butter with olive oil in cakes. So an orange thyme olive oil loaf cake, olive oil chocolate chip cookies. Apparently it gives a moister crumb and a bolder fruity flavour.
Sure does. I love olive oil in cakes, particularly carrot cake, of course. It just makes... Wow, it's so much more distinctive, isn't it? Would you prefer that as well?
I shall have to give it a go, Matt. And on to Cambridge's food and drink news now. And we welcome Gigi Perry, who will be providing news for members of the university too. And I hope the exams went well, Gigi. They've finished now.
Thank you. Yes, they're finally finished. I can't say it wasn't a long haul, but it is really great to be done. And I'm definitely making the most of freedom. I've had a lot to eat storing up on my to-do list.
Right, and everyone is feeling more relaxed now, I suppose.
Much more relaxed. And Mitz and Now May Week's finally begun. And how better to celebrate than through the medium of food and drink? So you can start off celebrations with a bang today and attend Cambridge University's Real Ale Society's garden party on Jesus Green from 3 till 6 p.m. They've just announced their beer menu, and you'd be a fool to miss it. From chocolate-covered banana beer to Texan pecan coffee beer, there is an excellent variety of ales on offer, all from Bexar County Brewery in Peterborough. Entrance is free for members or £2 for non-members. And in other news, 1815, the Cambridge Union Bar has reopened. Don't miss out on their happy hour deals, which run from Monday till Saturday, 6 till 9 p.m. And you don't need to be a Cambridge Union member to taste a tipple or two. All Cambridge students can enjoy their drinks at members' prices. And chocolate lovers, rejoice. Cambridge University Chocolate Society are holding their annual garden party on the 20th of June from 2 till 5pm in the beautiful gardens of Murray Edwards College. There'll be Pimm's, lemonade, music, ice cream and, of course, chocolate. Tickets are £12 for members or £15 for non-members. And check out their Facebook page to book. And very excitingly, Urban Street Kings have announced their Graduate Week Feast pop-up events, which take place at Sticky Beaks Cafe on the 26th and 27th of June at 7:30pm. Check out the event page on their website to book tickets. The menu sounds too delicious to miss. This is your chance to try quail and flat peach risotto on the Thursday, or pineapple granola and flowers on the Friday, among seven fantastic courses.
And that's open to everyone from the university and the city, graduates, non-graduates, come one, come all.
And of course, over the next 7 days, Cambridge is awash with May balls, where you can truly dine and drink to your heart's content. May your May week be filled with all kinds of delicious delicacies.
Now, the Olive Grove in Regent Street is serving breakfasts from Monday to Friday. It started this week. There are traditional Greek and English breakfasts available.
And tonight, as we said earlier, is Stella Pereira's supper club. I'm not sure that there are any places remaining, but if you're desperate, you can email her at amesa, A-M-E-S-A, at stellapereira.com. And Pereira is spelled P-E-R-E-I-R-A.
The Mitre in Bridge Street is having a beer festival. It's running now with 12 different ales to try.
There's a Portuguese wine tasting at Cambridge Vinopolis in Devonshire Road. Four places remain. Eight wines, including a white port and tapas, all for £25. And that's next Friday, the 20th of June.
Now, the Cambridge Food and Wine Society on the 21st of June is having a Midsummer's Night at the Gog Magog Farm Shop. The Gogs will be giving food demos and tastings and a feast of a supper of pulled pork from the Big Green Eggs. A taxi is included in the tickets for this event, running from Cambridge Station. That takes off from 7:15pm. See the Cambridge Food and Wine Society's website for details.
The new Aromi opens at the end of June, long awaited, in Pease Hill. And it will be quite different from the original branch, which of course is the shop with queues outside in Bennett Street. It will offer, amongst other things, pasta dishes and lots of granita and gelato. It will be opening in the evenings too, probably until about 8 or 9 o'clock.
Ivana Gresham is having a brunch club with Jenna from Fitzbillies. Three courses for £25, and that takes place on the 25th of June at 11:30. For more information and to book, you can email Ivana. Let's spell this out. Ivana.brdanovich. B.R. Danovich, effectively, at gmail.com.
Yes, well, that would be interesting. Brunch is a very good meal.
Certainly.
On the 28th of June, there's a Deeper Mystery Supper Club with three courses of homemade Indian food. Send a direct message on Twitter to at Deeper Mystery, Deeper, DEEPA MSTRY, for information and booking.
Now, another new eating place in Cambridge, the Smokeworks in Free School Lane. This is just off Bennett Street. It does ribs, pickles, sauces, buns. Prices from £5 to £10 for the meats. It sounds marvellous, and perhaps the nearest thing that Cambridge will have to Pitcue in Soho. This opens on the 1st of July, and we cannot wait. Its hours will be 11:30am to 10:30pm during the week, and 11:30am till 11 in the evening on Fridays and Saturdays.
Yes, and they've just tweeted to say they're welding in their staircase at the moment as we speak. So let's hope it's welded in securely by the time it opens. But that really is exciting. And I think it will appeal to a slightly different clientele from the pint shop.
Yes.
But there is a clear overlap there. By the way, there's not going to be any bookings. You just turn up in very much in the manner of Pitcue in Soho.
Okay.
The Urban Street King's Field Kitchen will happen at the Three Horseshoes in Madingley on the 28th of June. £50 gets you champagne on arrival and lots of things like oyster and ponzu tobiko, a crab dish, a scallop dish, clams, hamon, peas and sherry, mackerel beets, radish borage with horseradish snow, wild bass, tomatoes, gremolata, cherries, lemon curd and pistachio crumble. War.
Indeed.
It does.
And on the 5th of July, as part of the big weekend, there is a chocolate brownie challenge. You are invited to take part. So here is Caroline Biggs with the details.
Caroline, the chocolate brownie challenge. What's that about?
Well, funnily enough, it's about tasting chocolate brownies. It's going to be an event that's taking place as part of the big weekend. It's going to be in the food hall.
And that's on Parker's Piece.
On Saturday the 5th of July. And the food tent's going to be open from 10 till 6. And the chocolate brownie challenge is going to be between 2 and 4. It's a fundraising event for lovely local charity Arthur Rank Hospice. And we're very lucky because 6 local independent cafes have offered to donate some chocolate brownies to us. And we're going to cut them up into bite-sized chunks. And people will be able to pay £3. And then they can try each of the brownies and score them.
Oh, what a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So who's involved?
Well, we've got very bravely participating. We have Black Cat Cafe, Mr. Cake. Of course, he's not a shop, I should say. He's actually an online business. Gourmet Brownie Company, Afternoon Teas, Urban Shed and Garden Kitchen. And as a chocolate brownie lover, I don't know, it's going to be a real challenge. Each one is slightly different. It would depend on what your preference is for a chocolate brownie, yeah, as to which one you're going to favour.
Have you any idea how many people you can cater for?
Well, we're asking for 60 pieces of chocolate brownie. So that's going to be the answer, 60.
Oh, right. Well, that's well worth knowing.
And after the success of this week's event, the Curly Kale Cafe returns to Urban Lodge on the 17th of July for an evening of vegetarian tapas. Email information at urbanlarder for information and to book.
And we've time to remind you of a few events we've announced previously. First, on the 19th of June at 7 for 7:30, there is a dinner with winemaker Jim Clendenin of Aubon Clamat. Did I say that right, Alan?
Oh, I think so.
Good. And it's hosted by Noel Young Wines of Trumpington and is to be held at the Three Horseshoes in Madingley. You can phone Cambridge 566 744 to book.
A couple of supper clubs coming up. On the 4th of July, Frongley Kitchen is having an Americana evening. Contact them via the Frongley Kitchen website, but the number of places available is very small, so book very soon. And Kyung has a Korean night on the 5th of July. Email her, kyungstay@gmail.com, for details.
And there will be a Cambridge Cookery School pop-up at Nord in Sussex Street on the 10th of July. And that is all we have time for today. You can listen to a repeat of today's programme tomorrow at 7 a.m, and it will be podcast and made available next week. So remember, you can keep in touch with the Cambridge Food and Drink News by following Flavour on Twitter at Flavour105. Previous editions of the programme are available on iTunes and our podcast page on the Cambridge 105 website.
Coming up next is Summer Saturday, which today features the Town and Country Fair on Parker's Piece, the Covent Garden Street Party, the Arbury Carnival, St Columba's Church in Downing Street and Night Watch at the Cambridge Junction. At 4, it's Our Mill Road with Pamela Wieson, from 5 to 5.30 In Your Company with Sam Davis, and at 5.30 it's The Science Show.
So, thanks to all of our interviewees today. Our next edition is in 2 weeks' time on Saturday the 28th of June, so until then, it's goodbye from us all at Flavour.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And thanks for contributing. We'll